You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Mikey Campbell, and with me today, Neil Hughes, Managing Editor.
How you doing, Mikey?
Pretty good. Episode 54 today. Probably going to start out with the March event. What's going on with that?
Well, the rumors are March 15th, Apple's going to hold an event, and they're going to announce a couple new products. We're going to get a new 4-inch iPhone, which we've been talking about breathlessly for a few months now. And we are also going to get a new third-generation iPad Air.
What are you most excited about? Well, I know what you're most excited about.
But I mean. You know, I'm actually kind of not excited about the 4-inch iPhone just because I don't think I can get it. You know, I think that it sacrifices too much. For starters, I use like 100 gigs on my 128 gig phone. So if there is no 128 gig 4-inch iPhone, then I'm immediately out.
Right.
I like the smaller form factor. If it had all the 6S innards, I would gladly sacrifice 3D touch for the smaller form factor, but I don't think I'm going to get that. I'm guessing it's going to be more of a mid-range kind of phone, not the latest and greatest specs. And then, of course, you do the thing where you buy the 4-inch iPhone in March, and then, like, a few months later in September, there's an iPhone 7 that comes out, and then you're like, damn it, I want that phone.
Well, do you think it's going to be so gimped that you're gonna notice, or do you think that it's gonna have at least a bit of parity with the current 6S? Because I mean, it's gonna have to last the new upcoming 7 cycle, right?
Yeah, I guess the question becomes, how often do they want to update it? Do they want to do an annual upgrade cycle on this, or is it gonna be more like an iPod Touch where it's like when we get around to it? Because remember last year's iPod Touch update, we were exclusive to report that it was coming, but even we didn't know that it was going to have an A8 processor at the time. That was pretty shocking that a $200 media player ran the same chip as the latest and greatest iPhone at the time. So it's certainly possible, and the precedent's been set, that it could have a A9 chip with 2 gigs of RAM and all that. That would be awesome if it's got an A9 chip in it and same camera as a 6S, and the only thing it's missing is Touch ID or 3D touch, then I'm probably going to get it. But I can't see them doing that, because then where would the iPhone 6 fit in the lineup, you know? You're going to pay more to get a larger phone that has a slower processor and all that kind of stuff? They're going to cut corners somewhere, probably put a 6 chip in there, the A8 chip, and the slower Touch ID as well.
But in that case, it wouldn't support the M9 coprocessor, right? So,
no.
I mean, so that's embedded in the A9. So it would be.
So
I mean,
you would lose the always on Hey Siri functionality, which is something that I use a lot. So yeah, if they don't have an A9 in there, I'm out. It's got to be the latest chip. That's just the starting point for me. Just because I've already been using a 6S for, you know, 4 months now or whatever it's been. So by the time they announce this in March, I'm not going to take a step back for a smaller phone, as much as I like the idea of a smaller phone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, like the major build material costs. And I think the new 3D touch array is probably one of the more significant ones, but if they don't include that, I think people would see it as a misstep. But I don't know what else they could skimp on aside from the processor.
Yeah, I mean the memory. If it maxes out at 64 gigs, the rumors are there'll be a 16 gig entry level model and then a 64 gig model. So, you know, for people looking for that kind of phone, for most people, 64 is fine. But I take so many photos and videos and have so many apps and stuff on my phone that I can't go back to. You know, I was the guy that held on to his last dying breath, the 160 gig iPod Classic, because I had all my music on there. And until iTunes Match came out and all that kind of stuff, I couldn't have all my music because I have like over 160 gigs worth of music. So I have like 26,000 songs or something. So I need to have that much capacity on my phone. That's just I have like 10,000 photos on my phone. I'm insane. I know. But I don't want them in the cloud, because if I go back and find a photo from a couple of years ago, which I do quite often, then it's got to download and use my data. And it's like, I'd rather just have it all on there. I don't want to mess around with that stuff.
Yeah, I can see the headlines now that Apple is still offering the 16 gigabyte.
Oh, people are going to complain about that no matter what. Please, come on. So, you know, my mom has an iPhone, and she never uses anything on it other than, you know, taking the occasional photo and sending a text and stuff. She would never fill up 16 gigs if her life depended on it. For a lot of people, it's fine. The problem becomes when it won't install updates because it says you're out of space, but that's an even bigger issue for iCloud than it is for the iPhone itself. How many people do you know that say, it keeps bugging me to upgrade my iCloud storage, and I don't know what to do? And they can't back up their iPhone because they have, like, a lot of times there's like they swapped out their phone and the old backup's on there or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, listen, I know you think that the 4-inch iPhone is what's got me really excited, but you're actually wrong.
Am I?
What's got me excited is iPad Air 3, even though I won't buy one, I'll stick with my Pro, but smart connector on the iPad Air 3 is what the latest leaks suggest.
Right. Why are you excited about that, though? Because it's going to be... What specs have you most titillated?
Well, I mean, I'm a big proponent of the smart connector. I think that the smart connector has the potential to be something pretty awesome, like MagSafe with data is basically what you're looking at here. Now, it's not to that level yet. It's going to take some time. They got to upgrade the specs on it, but it's a first-generation thing. And I don't like messing around with Bluetooth and all that crap. I don't want to do that stuff, you know, when I'm connecting something. I want to have something that I can just kind of snap on there and have it work when I want it to be. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. I see the iPad as the future of computing in that it becomes the device that you need at a given point in time. It can be a laptop replacement. It can be a tablet. It can be whatever. It can be what you need it to be. And
right.
So I think the smart connector enables that. Imagine for this podcast, if we could have some sort of a custom docking station with USB ports on it, where I could set it down and have a microphone there and a keyboard and just prop it on there, and then it turns into my podcasting station.
Does it support the bandwidth for that kind of application, though?
Supposedly not, but nobody really knows because the specs aren't out, and there are no smart connector accessories out there right now except for the Logitech Create and Apple's own keyboard. There's nothing else. Nothing was announced at CES. So this is like when Lightning first came out. It's going to take some time for the accessory makers to really get on board and get behind it and invest in it. You're seeing a lot of keyboard makers, like my favorite, Bridge, announced an iPad Pro keyboard, but it's still Bluetooth. It's not using a smart connector. Womp womp.
Right.
So it's going to take some time for that stuff to come around. And from what I understand, what's interesting is in the documentation, when they announced it and stuff, Apple said that the smart connector could both transmit and receive power. Now, why would they advertise that if the only purpose of the smart connector is to allow non-powered accessories like the keyboards and stuff that can have a backlight or whatever? Why would they advertise that the iPad can receive power from the accessory?
Because they're gonna launch something like a battery pack?
I don't know that the specifications allow for something like that right now, but imagine if an iPad Pro 3 or something down the line had the new second generation smart connector, and you could dock your iPad and charge it while using it with accessories.
Yeah, I mean, that seems feasible. It's getting closer to bridging the gap, right, between Mac and iPad, but it's still missing those key applications that you can run on OS X.
Yeah, I mean, there's no support for... You can't get, like, the USB adapter and plug in your Mac mic and just have it work. We're not there yet. Maybe one day we will be. But that's where I see the, that's where I'm excited about the smart connector, and that's why I'm excited that Apple's doubling down and aggressively bringing it to the iPad Air 3. Not because I plan on getting an iPad Air 3, but because I think the smart connector could, if Apple plays their cards right and if accessory makers buy in, could be a huge game changer for the future of the iPad. I mean, let's forget keyboards, all right? You can come up with any kind of keyboard you want. Let's think about anything else that could connect to this. Think about how you could just prop your iPad down and on a musical instrument or on a you know, whatever, a microphone dock or something like that. Run down the list of things that you could do with this to put your iPad somewhere. You know, you have a kitchen accessory or something like that. You bring your iPad with you, put it down on the connector. It works. And it becomes what you need at that moment. It can be a laptop. It can be a terminal. It can be a podcasting station. It can be a TV. It can be a musical instrument. It can be whatever. And all it takes is you snapping some magnetic thing on there or putting it down on it, and bam. And now you got it.
Right. Right. But, I mean, accessory makers are going to, I mean, and, or musical instrument makers or whatever, I mean, they're going to have to make a choice, right, between whether to allow you to connect via Lightning or smart connector.
Right.
I mean, so which would they choose? I mean, iPad losing a lot of ground in the tablet market.
That's what we don't know, and that's the frustrating part. What are the specifications of the smart connector? How much better is it than Lightning? What are the power capabilities of it? What is the data transmission rate? Is it so gimped that all we're going to get with this first generation is keyboards? And then where is Apple planning on taking it? That's why I wonder why they said it was capable of both receiving and transmitting power. I'm guessing it doesn't receive enough power to recharge an iPad, so why would you want some juice coming over that? Maybe they're implying that powered accessories can also connect to it and do cool stuff, you know, things that might be a little more complex than just a keyboard.
Hmm. Interesting to think about. I'm not sure. I mean, and there's also the thing where you have to use it in landscape orientation.
Right.
Unless one day they also put a smart connector on the bottom.
What if they replace Lightning with it? What if smart connector is the Lightning replacement?
I guess, but they're going to have to bump up those specs from what we heard previously.
Yeah,
right?
But I'm thinking 5 years down the road, right? I'm not thinking iPhone 7 kind of stuff. I'm thinking, what if this is where they want it to go? You know, a portless device with magnetic charging. You can just set it down and let it charge. I mean, I'm just spitballing at this point, obviously. But I'm excited for the smart connector, and that's why I'm excited for these rumors with the iPad Air 3. The other stuff about it, who cares? The cases make it look like it's going to have a camera flash. Oh, boy.
Why? Why are they promoting use of an iPad camera?
Because people do.
Come on, Apple, please stop.
So,
please.
That would be weird to me if they did it for a number of reasons, including the fact that you would think that they would have just brought it to the iPad Pro if they're planning on doing it on the Air 3. But I'm guessing the processor probably won't be as powerful as the one in the Pro. The Pro's got 4 gigs of RAM. I could see them doing, you know, 3 or something or 2 on the iPad Air 3 and making it an A9 chip and not an A9X. And other than that, you know, the same thing, the 4-speaker array. So it's going to be a smaller iPad Pro based on the leaked schematics and stuff. I think that's if they sell that for $500, I think that's a pretty good product, right? I'll stick with the larger screen. I prefer the larger screen, but
yeah. I was thinking, like, what if one day Apple is going to start going towards wireless charging, right?
Sure.
So for a lot of people, that's maybe, like, the only reason why they use the Lightning port. They don't use it for data transfer or to connect peripherals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one day they could delete that port entirely,
right,
switch the data transfer and stuff over to the smart connector,
mm-hmm,
and then they would have space for both, and it would, I guess, look nicer.
Yeah, I mean, if you go through that process now of trying to get stuff to connect and talk to each other, it's a little cumbersome, right? So I have a Sony Alpha camera with built-in Wi-Fi, and I have to connect my iPad or my iPhone to a Wi-Fi network broadcast by the camera with some crazy password on it, and then I have to launch the Sony app, which is a piece of junk, and then I got to select the photos I want to transfer, and it's like this whole wireless future, or even Bluetooth. You know, you connect to the speaker, you lose the connection, you're connected to the wrong thing, you know, you go back, oh, is it on, is it turned off? There's a lot of just hassle with this kind of stuff that sometimes you just don't want to deal with that. GoPro is kind of the same way. You know, you can connect over Bluetooth, but is it on? Is it on with the Bluetooth or without? Did it turn it off to save the battery? Now you open the app, oh, the connection was lost, and it's like, oh, geez. Some of that's simpler on some Android devices because of NFC. Where you can tap, like the Sony camera has NFC capabilities in it. And theoretically, Apple could do something like that because they have an NFC chip in the iPhone, but they don't seem inclined to do it. They just want to use NFC for Apple Pay.
I feel like we're getting shortchanged on the wireless revolution. because it's
difficult,
it's
though.
Hearing.
Like, if everybody's got a wireless device and you want to sometimes even share that wireless device with other people, right? I mean, multiple people may want to use the same speaker or something like that. Just having stuff work is kind of difficult. That's why I'm not a Bluetooth speaker guy. I'm an AirPlay guy. I have just a one-bedroom apartment, but I have three AirPlay zones in my apartment because it's just that much easier. And anybody who comes over my place, once they get on my Wi-Fi, they can automatically access my AirPlay speakers and control the music and play what they want. And it works great.
Or no one, none of your friends have AirPlay, so it makes the process much easier.
Right. But yeah, Bluetooth, I mean, it's fine for the speakers and stuff like that. It's just not as convenient when you got to turn the device on, blah, 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 go do this, go do that. In my home, my speakers are always on. They're connected to Airport Expresses, or in the case of my Denon receiver, it's just always kind of sitting in the background. And then I can just hit a button and start playing music in whatever zone I want. Unfortunately, Apple has kind of not paid attention to AirPlay in years. So even though I have a super powerful iPad Pro, it cannot stream to more than one AirPlay device at once, unlike my Mac, which can do that. I'm guessing that's not a limitation of hardware. That's probably just Apple forgot about AirPlay.
Yeah, well, I mean, they kind of consciously forget about a lot of stuff for iOS, right?
Right.
Oh, well. Well, on the topic of 3D Touch, which the iPad is supposed to have, the new one, which would make me very upset, by the way, with having the Pro and not having it on there.
Wait, you think that the iPad Air 3 is going to have 3D Touch?
Could be.
No.
I mean, that's the rumor.
No,
out there.
That's not the rumor. I never heard that rumor, no. Where was that?
There's a rumor out there about that.
I guarantee you they're not going to do that. There is no way. No way.
You never know.
No, it's not happening.
There would
Didn't
be, Minji of course,
Kuo say that they can't like blow it up or whatever to the size of the iPad yet. They don't have the technology for it.
Yeah, but they're trying.
Well, of course they're trying. I mean, it'll come in the next couple years, but they're not going to introduce it on the $500 model when they got an $800 model out there that can't do it. It's not going to happen.
Okay, well, one day when that comes, one day.
Yeah, not this year.
Yeah, but interestingly. I mean, a big part of 3D Touch is the haptic feedback, right?
Right.
I mean, which is, you know, part audio, but mostly tactile.
Yeah.
So how are they going to do that on an iPad that doesn't have, you know, a vibration engine?
We're going to finally get rumble in the iPad?
I feel like they'd have to have like two motors or more.
Yeah, probably more, especially for a Pro, right?
Yeah, well, they'd have to probably put like, I don't know, four in the Pro just to even get people to feel it, because it's not like an iPhone where you hold it in your hand and you can feel it throughout your fingers.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you raise. It's kind of a difficult thing to do.
I would assume they would do something like amping up the sound or something. I mean, you can make the iPad kind of vibrate a bit with the speakers. Especially with a Pro.
Right.
I guess they could do something like that. Like maybe output an audio waveform or something that you can't hear but you can feel. I don't know.
It's weird to me that none of the Apple controllers, the sanctioned controllers for iOS, support Rumble, considering that's been a standard feature of game controllers since the Nintendo 64 came out.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Maybe they're worried about it shaking apart because of the spotty build quality.
Maybe. I don't know. But that's just one of those things where it's like, that's not Apple's bread and butter, gaming. So it's like, oh,
yeah.
Of course they didn't get that right because that's not what they do. But yeah, I think some sort of rumble in the iPad wouldn't be a bad thing. It would have to be kind of like a subtle in your hands type thing, but I don't know how, like you were saying, I don't know how they do that with the motors and stuff like that. That just seems like it would be kind of a interesting technical achievement.
They'll make the battery the weight for the motor. It'll be just the battery shaking back and forth. So anyway, as I was saying about 3D Touch, Apple's issue, well, not issue, but they filed for a semi-interesting patent that would bring similar technology to the iPhone and iPad Touch ID home button. So, I mean, now when you look at the iPhone, right, the iPhone 6S, the only part of the front-facing surface that it does not have some sort of force-sensitive input is the home button, which is oddly the only thing that actually moves back and forth. So it opens up the door to a whole bunch of possibilities, really. As I said in the report, like for example, you know how on Apple Watch you can respond to texts with so-called intelligent replies, right? So imagine that coming to iPhone, but instead of interacting with the screen, you touch a button, then the screen turns on, then you move your thumb, swipe through a bunch of responses on the screen. You can do that all with just your thumb and, varying your pressure on the Touch ID button. So do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you unlock the phone, press a little harder, text pops up, right? Then you press a little harder, and then you can cycle through all those responses with just, just by varying the pressure of your thumb and releasing message sent. So, I mean, it's an interesting piece of IP. What do you think about it?
I really enjoyed reading your report this morning because it was one of those things where, as I read it, I was like, this makes so much sense that I'm surprised that I didn't think of it before. It's like kind of one of those no-brainer things where it's like, of course a pressure-sensitive home button would add a lot of context. The greatest example of this, if you have an iPhone 6 or 6S and you're running iOS 9, how many times have you pulled your phone out of your pocket and hit the home button twice, and instead of unlocking it, it's got Apple Pay up? That happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
So if they could do something where it's like, press firmly and hold like a peek and pop type thing with the home button, then that would be one way of doing it. There's all kinds of interesting things you could do. Giving more context to what the phone does when you unlock it, like unlock it and take me here. Like, for example, let's say you have messages on the screen, and right now it's kind of, if you have Touch ID enabled, it's kind of a convoluted process where, let's say you're using what is the term that Apple has for when you start one thing on one device and finish it on another? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Continuity.
Thank you. Let's say you're using Continuity and you're reading something on your Mac, or you got directions open on your Mac or your iPad or whatever, and you want to open them up on your iPhone. Right now, you got to go to your phone, swipe up from the bottom left of the screen before touching the home button. So basically, press the lock button, swipe up from the bottom left of the screen to access whatever you were doing on the other device, then put your thumb over the Touch ID sensor to unlock the phone. So it's a three-step process to get your phone unlocked to where you wanted to go. Now imagine if you could instead do a more firm touch on the Touch ID sensor, and that would then automatically pull up whatever you're doing on another device. Or you have text message on your screen that you want to reply to. You swipe write on them to access it. And again, you have to do the same thing. Press the lock button so you don't unlock the phone. View the text messages, swipe on the text message, then unlock the phone by pressing your thumb on the Touch ID, and that takes you right to the message you want to respond to. What if they could use something like that to simplify that process and make it so that you didn't have to make it a three-step process to unlock your phone?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good idea. And it's kind of disappointing that it's not on there now, right?
Well, yeah, Touch ID is great, but it creates a whole mess of problems like I just described, where things that you used to do before when you didn't have Touch ID on your iPad, for example, now it's just like another step, another process. And of course, okay, here we are complaining about the half a second it takes us to do this. Yes, it is stupid to complain about that, but it is a step backwards from the way things were before. And if Apple could do something to keep that convenience and security of Touch ID while also just making it easier to access a device, why wouldn't they consider it? I mean, you could say the same thing for 3D Touch, right? How difficult is it to just tap on a photo and open it? Why do I have to press and hold on it?
Yeah. I still haven't really trained myself to use or 3D Touch. I mean, sometimes I forget it's there, yeah. And then sometimes it's like, I don't know. There hasn't been like a killer like app or killer feature that, you know, I really think that is so great. I'm going to use it all the time.
I use it a lot in Safari. And the reason I use it a lot in Safari is, like, if you're on a website that's not mobile optimized and there's a bunch of links everywhere, half the time you're hitting the screen and it opens the wrong link, and it's like, oh, geez, then you got to go back and then zoom in, find the right link. So what I'll do is I'll press firmly and hold on the link to make sure that I'm opening the right one. And I'll peek and then I'll pop to open it up to make sure I got the right one open. And then I'll also do it, like, if I'm editing a URL or something like that, editing text, I will do the firm touch on the keyboard. The problem with that is it gets a little wonky too, because, like, let's say I'm changing a URL or something like that and I want to go somewhere else and manually type it in, and I want to scroll all the way to the right and not delete the whole URL and re-enter everything, then I'll have to firmly press and push to the right side of the keyboard, and then it stops at some point and then the cursor doesn't go any farther. And it's like,
right.
And then you try to take your thumb off and press again, and then it doesn't work the second time when you try to do it. So then I'm just...
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. I feel like it... I mean, I know it's there to... as kind of like a, you know, user experience safety feature, yeah. But I feel like it... Like they need it. Either that or they need to...
They need to have some sort of infinite scrolling when your thumb goes over to the right side. Just keep scrolling. Like, don't require me to keep moving my thumb.
It's kind of... It is, you know, first generation, so yeah. I mean, hopefully it'll get better next time. But
I can see the potential there. I don't use the multitasking feature with 3D Touch just because I'm so trained to double press the home button. It's like one of those things that I can't break the habit.
I think that's like probably my go-to for 3D Touch.
Yeah.
Well, if people don't know what we're talking about, it's the to get to the multitasking. Cards view, you swipe from the left off the screen by pressing down a little harder than normal. Very convenient.
Yeah, it works pretty well, but I just can't break the habit of double pressing it because I've been doing it for so many years.
Well, that I mean, you know, Apple's marketing to a new demographic. It's not all about you, Neil.
That's okay. I mean, at this point, they're all power user features. And as with any feature on a Mac or even a PC, there's multiple ways to get things done. And as long as you don't, you know, abandon the people that learn to do it the old way, then as long as it works, who cares?
Speaking about abandoning people, do you have something to say about a certain camera manufacturer? A certain action camera manufacturer?
Which GoPro do you have?
Hero 4, what is the black? The black.
So that's the one that does 30 frames per second 4K?
Yeah.
Okay. And you live in Hawaii. You've got gorgeous scenery there. Do you surf or scuba dive or anything like that?
Yeah. You can take it out to the beach, hiking, what else? And then, you know, cutting the lawn and stuff, but...
So you like your GoPro?
Yeah, I mean, it's a handy little tool that you can just, like, pop in a bag or whatever, or my girlfriend's bag, and whip it out when you need it. And it shoots very, I feel like, you know, very good video.
So GoPro announced their earnings this week, and they fell off a cliff. They're down 30% year over year from where they were the holiday quarter of 2014. They are now a publicly traded company who can't find their footing. They're getting undercut by a bunch of cheap knockoffs. And they're also stuck with this issue of they have people like myself and Mikey who are happy customers who have absolutely zero reason to upgrade their GoPro. Here's what I'll ask you, Mikey. What could GoPro announce this year in a new hero model to replace the 4 Black that would make you buy another $400 or $500 camera to upgrade? What could they possibly announce?
Well, they could add more battery life magically,
mm-hmm.
and also integrate a screen without adding bulk. So the impossible.
Yeah. So there's not really much they can do to expand beyond their current loyal customer base, because, you know, after the GoPro Hero 2, there just aren't a lot of reasons to upgrade. They made it a little bit smaller or whatever. But there are so many things that GoPro could expand into and address. I mean, is there a camera company out there that has had success in the last 5 years? And I mean not like Apple making iPhones with cameras in them. I mean a camera company that has, you know, really made a splash in the average public consumer way that like GoPro has. You look at Canon.
I don't know.
I think Sony would
probably be the biggest success
Sony.
Story. And they sell their modules to Apple, so.
Yeah, and Sony, you know, you look at, again, as I mentioned before, I have a Sony Alpha camera and I love it, but I'm more of an enthusiast. GoPro is selling, I think they've sold like 25 million cameras to date or something they said yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, they've sold a lot of cameras. I would be shocked if Sony has sold that many in the last few years. GoPro is the biggest success story in cameras specifically, in the last few years, and they've squandered it all because they haven't... First of all, you can't tell what's going on with their lineup. Look at their lineup and try to figure out what's what and what you're going to get. You need a master's degree in science to understand what they're doing, like with all these specifications and stuff. And it's all the same product that comes out. Like even their latest revamp, the Session, the smaller one, they introduced that thing with a $400 price, which is the same as the high-end Hero 4. And the only thing that was different, even though it had like fewer specifications and wasn't as good, was that it was smaller, and that was it. Was the size of the GoPro really bothering anybody that much? Was it that like big and heavy that it was a problem for 99% of use cases?
I feel like no, and also the Session is... It's almost equally ungainly in that... Yeah. It's a cube, and the mounts are they all fit on the old stuff, but again, it's just a couple, it's like an inch off of one side, and it's good for people who want to mount it on their wrist or stuff like that.
And at $200, it makes sense. At $400, it made absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I mean the specs were just not there, and I feel like it was more of a They're overly confident in their user base and that it will keep growing.
Right.
It wasn't marketed.
There's no incentive for it's enthusiasts. It's dude bros on the slopes that bought GoPros, and they're happy with their GoPros, but they're not going to upgrade. Why would they buy a new one? There's nothing that's been offered from GoPro that would give you an incentive to upgrade. Like we established, I still have my Hero 3 Plus Black. And I have absolutely no reason to upgrade. And so GoPro's sales went off a cliff. They're kind of doing damage control. Their next quarter outlook is terrible. I think analysts were expecting them to report like $300 million in revenue, and it's actually like $160 million in revenue projected for next quarter, so half of what the market was expecting. So they're trying to do damage control. They've got a drone coming out that's going to be a self-flying drone. They put some footage out today of it flying through the air. of a guy taking off, like about to do a flip on his skis at a park, and throws it in the air, and it gets a spectacular footage. On the way up, flies just by a ski lift where it could potentially clip a human being and, you know, damage their face, and then gets this great aerial footage. So I watch this video and I think, first of all, GoPro can't even sell a decent camera for under $400, apparently. How much are they going to charge for this drone, especially in a market where the likes of DJI are selling $600 Phantom cameras that look great?
Yeah.
So how are they going to compete with that? I have no idea. But then you look at this video and it's like, how long is it going to be until every freaking ski resort on planet Earth says, you can't bring your drone here, you idiot, because you're going to injure somebody because it's dangerous?
Yeah.
I mean, this GoPro is getting into a market where not only are they not going to make any money, but they're going to be banned to oblivion. You're not going to be able to fly this product anywhere. So I don't see... I'm curious to see... Because as a drone enthusiast, I'm curious to see what they do and how they do it. But I don't really have high hopes just for those reasons. They also are working on a VR camera. Okay. Who's got a VR headset? Who's going to buy one? You know, if they're trying to turn around and fix their losses, their year-over-year sales declining, how on earth is a VR camera going to fix that? When most people don't own VR headsets to look at the footage. And then they say that they got a new Hero 5 coming out, which is going to be more convenient and connected, is what the CEO said. Okay. The stuff we talked about earlier, the pain it is to wirelessly connect to your devices, they're going to fix all that? They're going to make that work better? Because in my experience, nobody can fix it, not even Apple at this point. So GoPro is in a lot of trouble right now. And they're not even addressing the biggest problems with their cameras. And you've used GoPros, you know this. The fisheye lens. What are your thoughts on the fisheye lens?
It's hard to correct in post. I mean, it's great. It's all right as a concept, I guess. But
I was home for Christmas a couple months ago, and one of my nieces was there, and I showed her some footage from a ski trip last year, shot on a GoPro, and the first thing she said to me was, "It looks so flat, and the mountains look so small," and it's like, it wasn't flat and the mountains weren't small. I was out in Park City, but doesn't matter because it's on a fisheye lens, which makes everything beyond 2 feet in front of your face look insignificant. And I know why GoPro uses a fisheye. It's so you can just strap the thing on your head, not worry about if you got everything in the frame. You know that you're going to get your sweet downhill footage. And then that's it. Just set it and go. You don't have to worry about it. But it looks like crap. And they've got to have some way to, you know, do something, whether correct it in software or have swappable lenses or sell models that maybe have less of a fisheye effect or just a flat lens on it, that kind of stuff. I mean, the fact that they haven't addressed that issue, which has been there from day one of the GoPro, makes me wonder what they're thinking when they're developing their products. And the other main problem with the GoPro, if you've watched any amateur footage that's not, you know, shot by their promotional videos, is it's shakier than hell, right? I don't care what you're doing with it, it looks like crap. And so that's why you see all these Kickstarter campaigns for these gimbals and stuff like that that make the GoPro footage smooth, because the camera itself doesn't have any good optical image stabilization and the company doesn't sell any way of stabling the footage either. And so if I feel like they could address both of those with new products that would expand their market, and then people like you and me would look at that and go, I want that.
Yeah, I would buy one with optical image stabilization.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be too hard to build it in, I think. But they do tout the, what is it? Is it 130 degrees of field of view?
Yeah,
I think. I mean, that's like one of their, that's their signature thing. They've turned that negative into a positive.
Well, they say that they're a content company. What money are they making off content? They're selling cameras, and what they should do is expand their camera lineup. They should sell more cameras. Why not get into the mirrorless large form camera business? Sell like a durable camera that is like, you know, weather resistant kind of thing, and compete with the likes of, you know, those like $700, $800, $900 you know, and up cameras, why not make one of those and sell it to, you know, weekend warriors and people that like to hike and take sweet photos of the stars at night and that kind of stuff? Why not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to see where it came from, right? I mean, you remember, have you seen like the prototype and like the first gen GoPros, the
sure.
film?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, they came from humble beginnings, yeah, I guess.
They did.
I mean, the platform itself is kind of prohibitive to these, you know, great changes, not only because of its small form factor, but because it just wasn't designed to kind of last through these technological shifts that we're going through, especially, you know, as optics and stuff get better.
Right.
Apple's platform is obviously, you know, built for that. They made a good decision, but I mean, GoPro is kind of not. I feel like, I don't know, like if they sold like the Shuffle as, I don't know, Shuffle, the Session as like a $150 accessory,
yeah,
that you could, you know, augment your primary footage and, like, you know, maybe strap it to the back of your head or something.
Yeah, and then they would have like software syncing between the two, something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could do that. I mean, or you could, or like you said, make a flagship robust, like a still camera.
Yeah, like a That'd mirrorless with swappable yeah. lenses that, you know, to me, they're not a content company. They're a camera company. And there's a huge market of people that have iPhones and smartphones, and they don't think the photos are good enough on them. And they'll happily pay for a camera that suits their needs.
Yeah. You know, ever since Nikon got rid of the Nikonos underwater camera,
yeah,
there hasn't really been a viable replacement. I mean, there's been point-and-shoot, so you can bring underwater, and then a lot of housing
yeah.
makers make their stuff like Oceanic or whatever.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been an interchangeable lens platform that is built to just, you know, swap on the lens and, you know, go down beneath the seas. And I feel like more people are doing that now because GoPro exists as, you know, as an entity. So more people are taking underwater footage, and I feel like it's kind of rekindled this interest in underwater photography. And no one's really going after that market. I mean, there's a few digital, you know, like pocket cams that can go down like 30 feet
right.
or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's nowhere near the capabilities of
GoPro, know, is like 150 feet or something.
Yeah. So I mean, if GoPro brings that their weatherproofing technology to a still camera, I would probably be interested in it.
But does GoPro even have any weatherproofing technology? I mean, the camera itself isn't waterproof. It just goes in a plastic enclosure.
The Session is
natively Yeah, because all the
waterproof.
Previous GoPros, it just came in like an airtight plastic
yeah.
casing.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, if you're talking about swappable lenses with a waterproof camera, that's a engineer's nightmare. Like, the points of failure there are just so many things that could go wrong. But, you know, if you could make something like a plastic shell that wouldn't be obtrusive and could work, then why not? I think there's a market for that kind of stuff. I think they could expand into it. I don't understand. And these are just ideas. I mean, what the hell do I know, right? But I look at GoPro and it's like, where are your ideas? What are you doing? You know, VR and drones, really? That's the space you're going into?
Yeah. Not only are they kind of chasing the field, but I think they're choosing the wrong fields
yeah.
to chase. You know,
I agree.
It's kind of, I mean, they're great. I mean, they're interesting and intriguing, but there's no real, you know, there's no base there. It's a super niche product and or products that may or may not take off. I mean, just like 3D. Just like 3D video, right?
Right?
And in the movies, which I absolutely hated from the beginning.
Right. It's terrible.
And now that's finally dying. In your face, James Cameron. But I mean, you know, it's like, it's a fad. And some of these things are fads. I'm not sure if VR is going to be a fad, because I the hardware that they have out there now, or that they're promising, is really intriguing. It has some good stuff, like the HTC Vive. I don't know if you've seen the I don't know if you've seen the promo stuff for that, but I mean looks pretty incredible. But I mean, it still is cost prohibitive to the average consumer. So I don't know exactly what GoPro's game plan is. I feel like Nick Woodman sitting on his yacht and kind of like thinking, like, it'd be awesome, dude, if I had like this camera and I took VR footage and then I slapped on my Oculus and I could watch it back. It'd be great.
Yeah, because we're a content company, right, dude?
Totally.
Well, and the thing is, the laws of physics say that dedicated standalone cameras will always be a market. That market is not going anywhere, no matter how popular the iPhone gets as a camera, because you can only fit so many optics into that small of a space. If you want good photos and good video, you're going to need a larger form factor. It's just physics. It's just reality at that point. And until we can get to crazy levels of technology, it's going to take a while, and it may never happen. And so there's always going to be a market for these standalone cameras that offer these advanced capabilities. Now, there are rumors about the iPhone 7, at least the Plus one, having a dual lens on it for, I guess, higher quality photos, maybe DSLR quality, although that's just something that they say, and maybe even optical zoom, which would be awesome. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, from what I heard from Ming-Chi Kuo and the other rumors, it sounds like Apple's not... they're going to use the... How do you pronounce it? Like a LifeX,
I guess you would say. Yeah, it's an acquisition they made.
LifeX, whatever. Anyway. So they're... That company specializes in multi-lens, usually like four lenses or more.
Right.
They stitch together stuff with software. But if it sounds to me like they just used LifeX technology as far as placing the cameras in the phone and, just getting them to work together. It doesn't seem like they're going to use the image data in conjunction with each other. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have one lens slave to wide angle, and they're going to have another lens that has optical zoom,
right?
Optical image stabilization, or maybe the whole thing will be in like a OIS cradle or something. But it doesn't sound to me like they're going to, really leverage that LifeX tech to its full advantage.
Not yet. I mean, it's the first generation of it.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's done anything like this in a consumer smartphone yet.
Right. Well, wait. Didn't
HTC? HTC had a dual camera thing. And
Nokia had one, right?
But Nokia's wasn't a dual lens. It was just like one fat, like 42 megapixel lens or something like that, I believe.
Yeah. So I mean, I'd really like to see. I mean, it's interesting direction that they're going. Right. They're gonna expand the capabilities of the iPhone to shoot close, near, and far.
And I am going to be so mad if this is in the 7 Plus and not the 7. I'm going to be so ticked off.
Oh, well, I mean, they're going to have to differentiate somehow.
Ugh, no, they don't. The big screen is enough to differentiate. Give me the camera.
It would muddy the waters, because, I mean, what Ming-Chi Kuo is saying is they're going to have the 7, and then the 7 Plus, and then the 7 Plus whatever with the dual.
Oh, he's saying it's going to be a separate model, entirely?
Yes,
The photographer? That's not going to happen. No way.
He said because they got burned the last time they released a new product and were supply constrained, right? And they're saying that, or he's saying, from his sources within the supply chain, that the same story is happening with this
dual camera system.
I don't know, man.
No, they will not do that.
Well, in both cases, it's not good for the consumer, because they're going to have to choose a huge,
huge phone, and then extra for the camera tech will be built in. The question is whether they make it just the 7 Plus and not the 7.
I feel like they would do that.
Yeah, I feel like that's more possible, but they're not going to sell two 7 Pluses with two different types of cameras. It's not happening.
What if they what if they don't sell a 7 and they only sell a 7 Plus?
I'm switching to Android. Have you used AlloClip?
No.
So I have the AlloClip with one side just has like a polarizing lens filter or whatever, who cares. But the other side is a 2x zoom.
Yeah.
And I use that a lot. It's easily pocketable and works with your iPhone, just snaps over the phone itself. The only problem is you can't really do it with a case because it fits snugly on the phone. But, you know, those mountable lenses are a pretty interesting concept. I know that there's magnetic ones out there, too, where you can, like, put a special case or even just, like, put a sticker, a magnet around the camera on your phone, and then you can just pop this lens on there and it'll stick. That's an interesting concept that Apple could potentially explore to improving their cameras too. I know there's been patents and stuff for that kind of stuff. Yeah. I don't see them doing it. You know, there's always rumors that like Apple is going to make another camera. I think cameras were one of the things that Steve Jobs, before he died, told biographer Walter Isaacson that it was a market he was interested in getting back into. I think they're already in that market pretty well with the iPhone. I don't see them selling a standalone camera. But to bring it back full circle with GoPro too, Mikey, you were the one that wrote the patent story last year about Apple with a GoPro style concept. It was a patent they'd acquired from Kodak, and it sent GoPro's stock tanking when it came out. GoPro's stock is down like 80% over the last year since that came out.
Yeah, it's funny because Apple that patent just came with a cache of other patents they acquired from Kodak, and
it's that cube that they made, right?
Yeah. Well, was it the cube?
I think it was.
I'm not sure if it was.
It was one of their.
It was cube. It was cuboid.
Cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Market. It was like. Oh no! It wasn't cube. It was a rectangle, but it looked kind of odd. It was kind of GoPro-esque. It was GoPro-esque, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, as soon as the media caught wind of that, like, oh my God, Apple's going to build a GoPro competitor and destroy GoPro, as it, you know. But I don't know. I don't see that happening.
No.
Walter Isaacson, as many people note, is not in touch with technology, and that the autobiography kind of makes suggestions that are bordering on, you know, false.
Yes, Steve Jobs had cracked it, the issue to fixing HDTVs, right? And here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are, what, 4-5 years later?
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it is the interpretation that Isaacson brought.
Right.
You know, he just didn't interpret what – he couldn't understand or process what Jobs was saying in the context of the larger tech industry. So, I don't know.
But you agree, Apple is never going to release a standalone camera, right?
Not again, no.
Yeah.
Although the first one they launched was pretty sick, right?
Is it waterproof?
No, it was not, but it was huge and awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in sadder, not sad, but more disappointing news, Vernet X, the acclaimed patent troll, won their case against Apple's FaceTime, iMessage, and VPN services. To the tune of $626 million, which is one of the largest damages awards the tech industry has seen when it comes to this kind of these patent claims. So, what do you think about that, Neil? I mean, we've been covering this kind of stuff for years. I mean, I didn't get into writing about Apple to write about legal stuff. If I did, I would have applied to like Law 360 or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, as the biggest company in the world, you have a huge target on your back. So I guess it was inevitable that the lawsuits would come. But I mean, these patents, have you taken a look at the case at all?
Yeah. And here's all you need to know about this case. The ruling came from the Eastern District of Texas, which is where every patent litigation, especially from patent trolls, is filed. because the jury trials there, the people that live there, for whatever reason, don't like big companies, I guess, and they disproportionately side with the patent troll filing against the big name company. And in this case, they award them $600 million in damages. All you need to know is that number will not stand. Apple may end up paying VertNet X something, but it will not be this $650 million because Apple will appeal and the damages will be reduced and it will drag on and on and on and on. You already see stuff like that going on with the Samsung case. Samsung is trying to petition the Supreme Court to hear the case and discuss intellectual property law, which they haven't done in 122 years. But what were the original damages in that case? What, $1.5 billion or whatever it was?
$1.02 billion.
Okay, $1.02 billion.
Well, for the case that they're arguing.
Yeah, and now that's been halved, more than halved, right? So this is going to drag on. It's going to be a process. It's going to be whatever. But you know, these patent trolls that don't actually make any products like VertNet X, they don't sell anything. They just had an idea and they patented it and they're abusing it. And they're also abusing the legal system because in the Eastern District of Texas, that's where these things go through. So it's not fair and it's stupid.
It's do you find it the epitome of capitalism that VertNet X is a public company?
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one, gotta say.
Yeah, so I mean, VertNet X is a failed company, right? I mean, they had these patents, right, and they couldn't make it materialize in the consumer market, and so they said, "Hey, why not? You know, some other people are having more success with the features that we tried to have success with.
Right?
We were here first, so we need to sue them, and yeah." I mean, they are successful at doing it. They've forced Microsoft to settle twice already, and they have they have a bunch of cases with the, you know, a bunch of different huge tech companies. So I mean, it's a profitable business model, but is it a business model that we should let stand? I don't think so.
Yeah,
it doesn't really do anything to drive market innovation. It doesn't really. It actually hinders it. So
I agree with everything you just said. It's pretty crazy, but
it's interesting because I mean Apple they won an appeal and they had the initial verdict vacated, which was $368 million or something.
Yeah,
$368 million. And then when the appeals court vacated that, they opened the door to new claim construction. So basically that means royalties on, you know, ongoing infringement, and from 2012 to 20 to whenever 2015, when the second case was heard, Apple of course popped with the iPhone 5 and especially 6 and 6S, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, all of those products are lumped in now, and it just gave them a chance to
just snowball it even more.
Yeah, of course, it was a unanimous decision, right, by the jury, which is, I don't know, it's kind of fishy, but you know, it is what it is, I guess. They'll just be giving, Apple will be giving whatever money they get from Samsung to VertNet X.
I would love to go to, what is it, Tyler County or whatever, the Eastern Division where these cases go on, and I want to get to know the people there. Like, what is it in the water?
They're very tech savvy. They're a tech savvy community. They know all about tech.
Yeah, they're clearly salty folks there that don't like big business and want to stick it to the man or something. I don't know what's in the water there, but that would be something that I would enjoy. Just going there and getting to know the locals in the Eastern District of Texas.
Good barbecue here. Well, this has been episode 54 of the Apple Insider Podcast. With me today was Neil Hughes. Neil, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can read my musings at Apple Insider, and I'm also on Twitter at ThisIsNeil.
Will there be GoPro rants?
On Twitter? Only if people tweet at me, then maybe.
Okay, please tweet at Neil about how great you think GoPro is as a company. And I am Mikey Campbell. You can find me on Apple Insider and also on Twitter @MikeyCampbell81. Have a good one.